It's Outdoor Explorer, and this week we're doing something a little different. Hi everyone, I'm Eric Bork, and I'm the producer for Outdoor Explorer. What that means is that I usually work on the audio behind the scenes instead of being in front of the microphone. But this week I want to tell you about a biking adventure I went on in October. Myself and my girlfriend Heidi. Would you like to say hello, Heidi?
Hi, everybody.
Well, the two of us packed up my bicycle, helmet, shoes, tools, bike lock, and all of the other gear you need to race bikes in the woods, as well as regular clothes, power adapters, passports, and everything else a couple might need while traveling on a new continent for 2 weeks. We flew with all this stuff all the way to Australia to take part in the Single Speed World Championships. The Single Speed World Champs are an international cycling event that changes to a new location each year. Now, we'll talk a little more about that later in the show. For now, I'd like to start off talking about what it takes to pack up all this gear and get it all safely to another country. I'm going to walk you through some of what it takes to travel with a bike, and then we'll switch gears and we'll get to hear some of what happens at the Single Speed World Champs and some of the voices that make it so much fun. So let me set the stage for you. It was the night before our flight out. I was standing in the spare bedroom in my apartment here in Anchorage with my fat bike, a bunch of gear, some tools, my bike case, some random clothes, and if I'm being totally honest, it was a bit of a mess. I'm not gonna lie, it's a little disconcerting planning for a bike trip. I've got quite a big pile of stuff in front of me. So right now I'm looking at my bike case, which is this really cool Evoc bike case. They make these really great cases that have wheels on them and several handles. You can kind of pick them up and grab them from all sorts of different directions. Right now mine is broken down. You can take out the supports so that you can break them down. And I'm super lucky to have one of those magical apartments that has a shed, so I can actually keep mine in the shed. But now I have to reconstruct this thing. So now I have to unzip it and try and get all of the supports out and put it all together. As for the bicycle, it's nearly in parts right now. I'm not quite close to breaking the whole thing down. That is the other trick, is you actually have to break your bike down in order to get there. And in my case, I've got my shoes, my helmet, my gloves, tools, spare tubes. So yeah, it's a little bit daunting when you start to look at all of this pile of things and objects and plan on packing them up safely and taking them with you. But you know, I've done this before. I'm gonna stay strong and I'm gonna make this work. That's my plan. So wish me luck here. I'm gonna start putting this bike case together and we'll just take it from there. Okay, so now we are moving on to phase two. I've got my bike bag built. It's all ready to go. So now the next phase when you do this sort of thing is you have to take the bike apart. So I've got a series of tools here that I'm prepared to use. We have to take the handlebars off and we have to take both wheels off. So it's really not that bad, but there is a little bit of effort involved. So I'm going to get to it now and start taking the handlebars off. You kind of lean them aside, store them so they don't get banged up, and then I'm going to remove the wheels as well. So that's the next phase. Let's get into it. So some of the hard manual labor is done. I've now removed the front wheel. I have removed the rear wheel. I have removed both pedals and also taken the handlebars and stem off of the bicycle. So now there's this kind of elaborate process to getting it all to sit in there, which involves lots of Velcro straps and a little bit of luck and creativity. So that's where I'm at right now, trying to make all of these pieces fit into one cohesive whole. You know, and it's tricky because you want it to all be easy on the other end once you get where you're going to put it all back together. That's kind of the tricky part. You don't want to have to spend an entire afternoon when you get where you're going putting things back together. So I'm trying to keep it clean and orderly so that when I get where I'm going, it will be fairly easy. So now I'm going to try and stick it all inside this bag and we'll just kind of hope for the best, I think. Here we go. Wish me luck. Almost had a mini panic attack. I guess that's normal when all of your bike parts and your bike gear and your clothing and everything else are laying around you in a mini pile. It should be normal to have an almost breakdown. I thought I lost one of the axles to my bike. I'll be honest, it's been a little while since I've ridden the bike, so some parts have been kind of hanging out around the house, but I just got mixed up. Because one wheel was over there and one wheel was over there, and so it kind of looked like a piece was missing. So yeah, common mistake. We're going to go with that, a common mistake. So now we have to get the wheels. And mind you, I do ride a fat bike because, you know, it's Alaska and I ride year-round and they're a lot of fun. So now the challenge of trying to get the wheels inside the case. I've never packed up this particular bike, so this should be kind of an adventure, but I'm ready for it. I think it's gonna happen and I'm not too worried. So we're gonna give it a try here and we'll hope for the best. And now that I know where both axles for both wheels are, it's getting a little better. There we go, moving on. Okay, wheel, here we go. One important step that I learned right about at this time is that when trying to pack up a fat bike, you need to let a lot of air out of the tires. These tires are just too big to fit in most cases without letting most of the air out. Even then, it was still a challenge to get the wheels in that case and have them fit safely with the rest of the bike frame too. At this point, we're going to skip ahead a little bit. In order to expedite the boarding process, I decided not to wear a microphone and run the recorder at the airport in Anchorage. Sometimes it can be hard enough to check in, send all of your luggage through, and get through security, even when you're not carrying recording gear and a live microphone. You'll just have to use your imagination a little bit to imagine me wheeling the rolling bike case through the airport, haggling with the airline folks a little bit to get the bike and luggage on the plane, and then finally making our flight. The flights themselves were uneventful. We flew from Anchorage to Seattle, then on to Vancouver.
Flying conditions today, departing Vancouver, probably just 2 o'clock.
Then the 16-hour flight from Vancouver to Sydney, Australia.
Once we arrive at Sydney, we'll be 30 degrees Celsius. By this time, you should be well seated, seatbelt
on. Well, we made it. We are standing in the airport in Sydney, looking at the sea of luggage carousels. But I'm not waiting for that kind of luggage because bicycles go through oversize. So right now we're kind of standing over in a corner watching sets of golf clubs, and it looks like a guitar. And I don't know, that could be a cooler full of fish. It's really hard to tell. But waiting for the bicycle, usually they take a little longer than luggage to come out. But this is kind of what you do. We had some adventures getting here. They didn't want to let us take the bicycle at first because we didn't realize that you had to register it with Air Canada. But now I know. And we were really lucky. We had a great service in Anchorage at Ted Stevens International Airport. They really helped us out and did some phone calls, and we were able to pay for the bicycle to go all the way through. It was only about $50, maybe a little less than $50 to bring the bike. Once or twice, I've even taken my bike on airlines and not had it get charged at all. So that can be random, but usually I would plan on spending at least $75 for your flights. But considering that I just brought it to an entirely other continent, $50 seems okay. So here we are. This is what we do. Now we just wait. And hopefully it made it in one piece. But I probably won't know that until I actually get it out and put it all together. And then try to ride it. But they're here just keeping our fingers crossed. And we're just going to keep waiting here at the Sydney International Airport. And it's here. It took a little bit of time to make it. And at least from the outside, it seems to be no worse for the wear. I'm going to open it up a little bit here and see what it looks like on the inside. Yep, everything appears to be in place. I'm happy about that. And also I found my flip-flops, which I'm probably going to need because it's almost 90 degrees here in Sydney today. And when I left Anchorage, it was about 37. So yeah, I'm going to be a little warm. But yeah, it looks like the bike made it. Everything appears to be in one piece. It doesn't look like anybody took anything out of there. So I think in a day or so, I can put this thing back together and be ready to ride. Woohoo! Major hurdle accomplished. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer. My name is Eric Bork, and we're talking about traveling with a bicycle from Australia. Stay tuned, there's more show coming up.
The next phase of this adventure involved Heidi and I riding some trains into downtown Sydney with a bicycle and all this other stuff. We then went and picked up a camper van that we had rented, and we drove overnight from Sydney in New South Wales to Melbourne in Victoria. The drive itself was pretty nice. We unpacked our bags a little bit. I put the bike mostly back together. I actually had some trouble with the headset, which is the part where the handlebars, the front fork, and the rest of the frame all come together, but it was in one piece and safely in the van. We drove halfway to Melbourne and then camped out at a nice spot filled with lots of birds along a river. The next day, we made it to Melbourne and were ready for the first day of events as part of the Single Speed World Championships.
Single Speed World Championships 2016. Woo! Yeah, are we ready? Side two. Are we ready?
Now, by this point, you might be asking, what exactly is a single-speed bike? And what are the single-speed world championships? Well, that first question is easy enough to answer. A single-speed bike is a bike that has only one gear. So, that means there's no derailleurs in the front or back, no shifters to mess with, and no extra cables. Maybe you can think of a bike you might have had as a child, a really simple machine that you can just hop on and ride. Though these days, they can have disc brakes, suspension forks, and fancy carbon wheels. You might imagine that people who ride these sorts of bikes off-road are maybe sometimes on the fringe of popular mountain biking. It's true, and I am one of those people. The explanation of the event itself is a little harder to nail down. The first known such event goes back to 1995 in California, and it was basically a gathering of like-minded people riding bikes together. The first time an event was called the Single Speed World Championships was in 1999. They've taken place in different locations around the globe every year since. Things usually get started a couple of days before the actual race, including several days of group rides, meeting and greeting new people, seeing old friends you haven't seen since last year, silly feats of daring, and yes, sometimes drinking adult beverages. Two other things that stand out about the Single Speed Worlds is that the fastest man and woman that race have to get a tattoo with the logo from that year's event. As the saying goes, if you don't want the tattoo, don't win. Another interesting aspect is that each year teams compete against each other to determine where next year's event will take place. For example, in 2016, the New Zealand team won by first winning a dance-off competition. They finally claimed hosting rights by racing bikes down to a pond and being the first team to get 3 out of 4 people over to a gazebo by swimming to it. I don't think I've mentioned how cold it was during the 2016 Worlds. The temperature around Melbourne was in the 30s and 40s for most of the week. The first set of competitions that week in Melbourne took place at a bike shop called Commuter Cycles. Those guys were great. They provided a live DJ, a smoke machine, and lots of people. The tasks were all centered around bike mechanics and being the fastest at working on a bike. For example, one event was to see who could build a wheel from scratch the fastest. Let's go back and listen to some sounds from that night. We'll hear a little bit of the competitions and what I was seeing at the time.
Single Speed World Champions, this is the wheel build. We've got a wheel over here, it's going to be tried by the judges. Look at him, he's going back to his wheel. He's turning that wheel, he's twisting that wheel, because he knows that wheel's going to go against that wheel.
We're at the first event of the Single Speed World Championships 2016. Tonight's events are the mechanics events, so. They're calling them My Mechanic is Best. So you have to do various feats of mechanical, mechanical strengths. The first one was to be blindfolded and have to change a tire and a tube without being able to see. So dismount the tire from the wheel, change the tube, put it all back together, air it back up without being able to see. That one went pretty smooth, several heats of that one. This last event, they had to apply bar tape to road handlebars with one hand while having a beer taped to the other hand and finishing beer at the same time. So you had to finish the beer before you could be considered finished. So applying handlebar tape with one hand. And if you've ever done that, you understand how difficult a prospect that is. So these are kind of the precursor events, kind of gets people to know each other, to meet each other. They kind of introduce what's going to be happening for the rest of the week. Just usual starting stuff. These are all parts of the Single Speed World Championships, everybody. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. You're tuned in to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Eric Bork. Today we are featuring a show involving two topics. It's one part traveling with a bike to another country, and another part about racing in the Single Speed World Championships in a small town just north of Melbourne, Australia. Portions of today's show were recorded live in Australia in October of 2016. Let's recap. So far, we've flown with a fat bike, all of the gear, tools, clothing, everything necessary for two people to travel abroad. We drove overnight in a camper van from Sydney to Melbourne, where some of the initial events and meetups took place. From Melbourne, we headed north to a small town called Wood End. This is where all of the main events, including the race itself, were held. That first day was time to continue meeting old friends and to sign in at registration. While everyone was busy gathering their race numbers and gifts, I stole a real quick moment with one of the event organizers, Tim Smith, to ask him about one area we will be riding in.
So, Australian in a way, which is what we were trying to capture in lots of things.
Right, right.
You know, you've got the, you know, the cliffs behind of Hanging Rock, and then like this beautiful eucalypt forest, and then we're at a like an old country horse racing track.
Cool.
So, you know, the old corrugated iron and timber bars and things around there.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you're looking across these open areas with these big kangaroos that are sort of this big that are just cruising around. Yeah.
You're just hanging out?
Massive.
Oh, cool.
You forget how big they are. And no, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. It's a nice spot.
Later on registration day, we gathered under an outdoor tent and were given a formal welcome by a local Aboriginal. I really enjoyed being reminded of where we were, who had lived there, and of the history involved. Let's listen to those opening comments.
Yeah, this is the land of the Jarjarburung people. Bengek Wumunjike Bengen Anajandak. I welcome you to our country. Larak Jarjarburung Kumicha. The land of the Jarjarburung people. First of all, I'd like to pay my respects to my ancestors, elders, past and present, and to any elders here today. On behalf of the Jarjarburung traditional owners and Jarjarburung Clans Aboriginal Corporation, I'm honoured to welcome you here this evening to the official opening of the Single Speed World Championship here in Wood End. I reckon it's a great choice to stage this event here. It is. It's really pleasing for us as the traditional owners of this area, when the important events like this are held on our country, and it gives us an opportunity to talk about the significance of this land, to what it means for us, and also to share that with visitors like yourselves. For those international visitors amongst you, and I've been told there are quite a few, I would particularly like to extend a warm welcome to you who've travelled from overseas to here. Some of you might know that, or may not know, and this is particularly directed at our international visitors. In 2013, the Jarjarburung traditional owners signed a historical agreement with the state government, recognising the Jarjarburung as the traditional owners of this area that we're standing on today. Aboriginal people in this country, in this particular area, have never conceded ownership or custodianship of this land. They never will, and we fight hard to make sure that our rights are recognised and that the rights of our future generations are recognised as well. Thank you. Life here provided a place for Jarjarburung families and elders to teach their children. These practices continue today. How to survive and live with country. Jarjarburung people learned, this is my ancestors, to live from the land and shared that knowledge and traded resources and exchanged gifts with neighbouring clans. Dja'adja'wurrung country is a cultural landscape that is more than just tangible objects. Imprinted on it are our dreaming stories, our lore, totemic relationships, songs, ceremonies, and ancestral spirits, which bring everything to life, folks. And they hold significant value for Dja'adja'wurrung people. The values that the Dja'adja'wurrung people hold for their country are shaped by our belief that all things have a spirit. We call that spirit Muruk. That is found in the water, the birds, the plants, the animals, rocks, and mountains. Dja'adja'wurrung people, like other indigenous people all over the world, see all the land and its creatures in a holistic way. Everything is interconnected, folks, with each other, and particularly with the people. I would like to close by saying, you know, when you're travelling across country, that our creator spirit, Bunjil, the eagle, watches over you and makes sure that you have a safe journey across our country. I want to close now by saying, Wumanjika. Thank you.
As a tree line breaks in a wide open space, I stare at a bright red sun, I search all day and never find anyone.
The day before the race saw a serious change in the weather, and not in a good way. The organizers had planned a number of events at a local park and horse racing track, but unfortunately the weather had other plans and sent rain coming at us at an angle. The small marching band that came to play still stuck it out in between storms, playing on improvised instruments as well as conventional ones. The rest of us found ourselves huddled underneath large tents and awnings, which I must say did help for getting to know new people, and at least they didn't run out of beer. Plenty of fun was still had by everyone, despite the weather. Tiny children's bikes were raced around a course lined with hay bales, and plenty of other carnival-themed events and group rides went on throughout the rest of the day, which leads us to race day.
Here it is, the morning of the actual race event. And you can tell that people are a little pumped up today. We've had 3 days of other events and meeting new people and little races and all sorts of things going on here in town. But today is the actual race. Normally, people don't really get up until 9 or 10 here in the campground, but it was before 8 today, and everybody was already up hanging out. You can tell that people are getting nervous. Some people are getting really excited, and things are going to happen. I need to put my race number on my bike. You know, a little card on the front. Usually the numbers go up, you know, one through however many people are participating. But for this event, everybody is a winner, and they just made all of the numbers the number one. Which, it's pretty funny. It's kind of like their personal statement on how they feel about these things, which is just a little bit more laid back than usual. So I'm using some zip ties. Get my race number on here. I'm going to start eating some breakfast. We pre-rode the course the other day, and it was a really fun single track course. A little bit little bit of everything. Some tight hills, some little downhills, some little stunts, you know, logs to roll over, some rocky sections, just a little bit of everything. And I'm pretty excited about it today. I think it's going to be a really fun time. All the people we've met so far seem pretty laid back, happy to have a race, but I think if you were to have a flat tire or something, people would definitely stop to help you out. Feels like that kind of event.
Everyone made their way to a park where the final events would take place. When we all lined up for the start of the race, it was just a sea of costumes and colors and decorated bikes. People from all over the world were all there to ride, to race, and have fun. Before we started the race, they held a dance-off competition. It was one of the qualifying events I mentioned earlier to decide what country would get to host in 2017.
All right, these people up the front, you're it, you're the judges. You need to focus on rhythm. You need to focus on style.
Then, after a running start that had us searching for our bikes that other people had hidden in some trees, we were off. All in all, it was a great race. A couple of hundred people out in the woods just laughing and talking amongst each other, some crashing, lots of hard-earned sweat, and of course, some really fast riders that gave it their best. After all, the single-speed worlds are known to attract some of the planet's fastest professional riders looking for a way to blow off some steam during their off-season. For myself, I was just happy to finish in one piece. Once the race was over and we were all recuperating, I caught up with a few friends to ask them about their experiences. First up is Ursula Cordes. She's from Slovenia and is a regular at these events.
Not me.
Why not?
I'm not ready. I'm freezing.
Why do you keep coming to these things?
I have no idea. I ask myself too. Because it's fun, I suppose.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How many have you been to?
Alaska, Japan, Italy, and the European ones.
And you have no idea why you keep coming?
Yeah, because it's fun, you meet friends, and you're riding, and you're all muddy and tired and dirty, and you're cursing, so it's good.
You make it sound amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I also spoke with Ko Kitazawa. I first met Ko when he came here to Anchorage for the Single Speed World Championships in 2014. He then went on to help organize the 2015 event in Hakuba, Japan.
What made you want to host one?
I thought it's time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Time to bring it to Japan?
Yeah, because it's been a world, but never in Asia, so it should be more real world.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, Japan or China or wherever it should be, then, yeah, we did it. Yeah.
And was it hard for you to do it last year? Was it?
Oh, yeah, it was really, really, really difficult because single speed is too way different from Japanese culture, because Japan is more like very conservative and like kind of rigid, and but single speed is very opposite way, so it was really difficult to combine something two different together. But it worked well in a way because of the people, like our hosting members and also participants, and yeah, so it just worked.
Yeah. And what was your favorite part about hosting? Did you have a favorite part?
That part was really, the best in my life. Well, yeah, we have many interesting culture in Japan, so I really want let have them know about it.
Yeah.
So, then I think it worked, so, yeah.
I also stole a few minutes of time from one of the organizers of the World Championships in Australia and a bit of a famous face of these events over the years.
My name's Damo.
And where are you from?
I'm from the Dandenongs, just outside of Melbourne.
And how many of the, have you been to?
The nine.
Nine?
Yeah.
And why? Why do you keep doing this?
it's part of a gathering of people whom I want to connect with every year. And it has that the common denominator of bicycles, participation, having fun. Just keep coming back.
And this year, why did you help host it? Why did you go through that?
Well, good question. going into Japan last year, I had no intention of having anything to do with the hosting, but it was more like just helping out a mate, you know. Ado wanted to go for it, and I thought, oh, I'll give him a hand. And then as we got back, that hand got, you know, a little bit more involved, and so much so it's probably about a 10 or 11 months' work, you know, leading up to it. But, yeah, I have no regrets, you know. We had a great time. I think, personally, really, I guess my motivation or I had some drive that some of the events that I had been to were better than others, and I really wanted to have an experience for people the best we could provide. And, you know, the elements of some of the better events, try and pull them together. And get it back on track, I think. So to speak.
Yeah. And why single speed?
Single speed, it's simple, and it brings together a certain kind of people, whether it's single speed or not. You know, the people who are attracted to single speed are very a good people, you know. Mm-hmm. And it takes that sort of element of the single speed or the simple bike maybe to bring that together. And that's the reason.
I'd like to bring in one last perspective on what these events are like. So I've asked my travel companion, my race manager, and also my camper van co-pilot, Heidi, to help me describe what the Single Speed World Championships are like. Hi, Heidi. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you've been to a few of these now. Tell me about your history so far with the Single Speed Worlds, or what it's been like getting into these.
Sure. So my first year was back in 2015. We went to Japan together, and that was the beginning of the excitement and the travel and whatever you want to call it with this. But Japan was great, and so we decided to go back and for another one go to Australia, 2016. So I've been to two so far.
Yeah. So what did you think of the first one you went in Japan?
Well, I've always wanted to go to Japan, so it was an easy sway, I guess you could say. But I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was a great way to travel to a different country, see a different part of the world, but also a great introduction to the community of being a single speed biker. It was much longer of traveling than I anticipated. You know, the single speed world championships are only about 5 or 6 days in duration. But we ended up traveling for 6 weeks, and that was a very, very cool way to get us over into Japan, someplace that I'd always wanted to be, and to have a great introduction to the culture of Japanese culture, but also single speeding.
Mm-hmm. And also Japanese single speeders, which I think is like a whole different version of single speeders.
Totally. Yeah. Very, very different culture.
They're so hardcore and so fun and laughing all the time, even though they're making you ride up these gigantic hills.
From what I hear.
Yeah. They're just laughing. So how would you try and describe one of these to someone who's never been?
Chaos. Chaos. It's just utter chaos from the time that you land through the whole entire duration of the event. It's just go, go, go. And there's activities pretty much every moment. But as a person that's kind of watching from the sidelines, it's, you know, lots of activity all the time. Hundreds of people all with the same love for an activity get together and do what they love. They go on group rides pretty much daily, if not multiple times a day. There's activities in the evening, there's dinners and parties, and then of course there's the ride, which is what everybody is there for in addition to everything else.
Yeah, I think you have another side of it, because since you don't actually race in them, you get to see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, what people are doing while people are riding, or the other folks who are running around making things happen that isn't just riding a bike. So why not, you know, when me and the other people riding are gone, I mean, you get to sit there and watch other people doing their daily activities or cleaning up or setting up or whatever the case may be.
Right. It's it's been different both years. Japan and Australia have been both very different. Japan, I was very much on the sidelines watching things happen, watching the race as a spectator. And in Australia, I was renting bikes and going on the group rides with everybody and much more involved. But we definitely got more involved with the people that were organizing it. So as everything's going on, I kind of have had a little bit of a more insider idea as to what was going on.
And can you put a finger on what makes them so much fun? Why people would want to travel all the way to the other side of the world to go do this?
Well, I think a lot of it is just the people that the activity attracts. So you're meeting people from all around the world, all that have the same interest of both single speed biking or biking in general. Some people go there and they're not even single speeders, but they have a single speed bike and they're there to ride. But also the love of travel and meeting new people and adventure. And I think all of those things go together to make it a very enticing event to participate in every single year.
Do you have a favorite memory from this last year in Australia, or a favorite portion of it?
I think my very favorite part of the single speeding this year was the group ride in Woodend, where the championships were held. If you can imagine 200, 250, 300 people, I don't even know how many of them were riding that day, but we all went on a group ride together and went out to this horse track, middle of nowhere, arena, and there was just a carnival there, and it was just a ton of little fun activities, and all of us rode together. It was like 10 miles or something like that,
right?
Which isn't super far, but if you can imagine that many people all riding on trails and then eventually roads and yelling to each other, car, car, car. It was just a very funny experience. But then actually at the carnival, there was this really cool, what's it called? Like
virtual
reality. Yeah, where you sit on this really tiny bike and you have to pedal. You have a little headset on and it looks like you're biking up and down hills out in the middle of the country. And the aim is to run over sheep. But you have to pedal fast enough to actually get to the sheep. And it was really fun.
On a rickety stationary bike.
Yeah, stationary bike. It was just really funny.
And talking about that day also brings me to one of my other points was, what did you think of the weather this year?
Yeah, the weather sucked. That was probably the most disappointing part of the trip, because we're traveling from Alaska, where it's cold and rainy and, you know, and going to Australia, which in my head, it's warm and, you know, sandy beaches and hot, hot weather. But we were in southern Australia, so it was actually cold and wet the entire time. Windy. I think we even got some hail and snow while we were there. And we're in a camper van, so it's not like you can just go inside and get warm, take a hot shower. Nope, you just have to kind of stick it out. That was, yeah, a bummer, but still fun, still fun.
Would you say that was the worst part of this last year?
I think that, yeah, definitely the weather was the worst part. It was just unexpected.
Did give us a good reason to huddle together and meet new people, though.
Yeah, right. Stand by a fire. There's a campfire one night where we, yeah, just kind of all...
Or hiding underneath every tent that you can find.
Yeah, and, yeah. Hung out and, yeah. Good reason to socialize.
That being said, are you inspired yet to become a single speeder yourself?
Not sure about that, actually. I've definitely thought about it, but I do like gears. Every once in a while, I will find myself biking and not using gears in order to practice for maybe someday getting or turning a bike into a single speed. But I'm not sure. I'm 100% convinced yet.
We both know that I've tried.
Yeah.
Do you have any parting thoughts for anybody else who might be thinking of traveling to one of these?
Well, yeah, I would say that if you're interested, you should definitely do it, no matter what. I'm glad that I have been roped into this community. I would have never found it had it not been for you. But it's been a highlight of my years, the past couple. And it's a good reason to get out and travel. So if you know where the next one is and you want to go to that location, use it as an excuse to go there.
New Zealand this year, everyone.
Yeah.
It's going to be in New Zealand.
Yeah.
All right, Heidi, any other last thoughts?
I don't think so.
Perfect. All right. Well, thanks, Heidi. Thanks for coming in and providing another perspective and another voice for all this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hope you had fun talking about it.
Of course.
And now we got to reminisce a little bit.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in to Outdoor Explorer today. I hope you enjoyed the show. I also have a lot of other people to thank for helping make the event and this show happen. Thanks go to Tim Smith, Ursula Cordes, Ko Kitazawa, Damo Otten, Ada Whitaker, Michael Davison, Heidi Goheen, and everyone that helped make the 2016 Single Speed World Championships so much fun. The assistant producer for Outdoor Explorer is Hannah Doro. My name is Eric Bork. Have fun out there, everyone, and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.